Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Lehman Brothers claims more victims 1 year on, but will it finally lead to compensation for UK investors? What should savers fear more, inflation or deflation? And we look into the future of private banking and financial advice. All this to come in this week's FT Money Show. I'm Matthew Vincent, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with my colleagues from FT Money, Alice Ross.
Hello.
And Lucy Warwick-Ching.
Hello.
And our special studio guest, Adrian Locock, Senior Investment Advisor at financial advice firm Best Invest.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news. This week, investors who lost money in investment products linked to Lehman Brothers after the US bank collapsed a year ago received some bad news and potentially good news. The Financial Services Authority said on Wednesday that two companies that sold so-called structured products backed by Lehman Brothers bonds had gone into administration. NDF Administration and Defined Returns Limited, which marketed structured products to private investors, were forced to wind up after concerns were raised that they faced legal claims over inadequate risk warnings in their marketing literature. The move will affect 3,700 UK investors who had bought plans with the two providers. But it does mean that these investors will now be eligible to apply to the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. So, Alice, does this development mean that people may get their money back?
Yes, it does mean that they may get their money back. It certainly introduces a level of a greater level of certainty than there was before, because remember, these investors have had their money locked up in these products for a year now since Lehman's went bust. They haven't been able to get at the money at all, and they haven't known how to get at the money. So now the fact that two of these main structured product providers have been put into administration is at least kickstarting a process where they can now go to the Financial Services Compensation Scheme and try and get some of the money back. First, the one thing to note is that before they can go to the FSCS, the scheme has to deem these providers, NDF Administration and Defined Returns Limited, in default. And that's a bit of a technical process which can take time. It can take months, possibly even longer. So that would be the bad news, in that it's been kickstarted, but we don't really know how long it will take for them to get their money back. And there's also actually another caveat, which is that the Financial Services Compensation Scheme only pays a maximum of £48,000 back. So anyone who had more than that in one of these products won't see the rest of that money.
So it's not necessarily all good news right now. For those listeners who are not familiar with structured products, what exactly was the problem with the products that were offered by NDF Administration and Defined Returns Limited?
Well, the way they work is that they offer you a guarantee of your money back. So, you know, if you originally invest whatever it is, £50,000, they guarantee you that you will get that £50,000 back, usually at a certain date in the future. Often they're structured for 3 years or 5 years, along with any return on a certain stock market index, or sometimes it's a basket of goods. So, you know, the idea is quite appealing to investors because it offers them some security with the prospect of some stock market return. So you can understand why investors would buy them. But what has possibly not been made clear in that is that this guarantee isn't completely watertight. The way that the structured product provider ensures that the guarantee is met is by using bonds from other investment banks. Now, Lehman Brothers was one bigger bank. They weren't the only bank that were underwriting these products. There were other banks as well, but obviously Lehman's was the one that ran into problems. So when Lehman's went into administration, that meant that the guarantees could no longer be met and the investors' money was locked up in the products.
And it seems that the problem here was that the marketing material used by these two firms didn't make that risk sufficiently clear, hence the Financial Services Authority taking the action that it has done. For investors who might currently have a structured product with another provider, or who may have been even thinking about buying one, what's the advice in terms of assessing the risk?
I think just be very, very aware of where the risk lies. There's been some controversy that we found out recently. I mean, we've been following this structured product story for a while on FT Money, but we reported earlier this year that some providers wouldn't state who the people behind their bonds were. So they wouldn't say what companies were backing up the guarantees. Now, that to me seems a little bit dodgy. If you're going to buy one of these things, make sure that you know what investment banks or what companies are backing up the guarantees and take a view on how strong you think those companies are. And if you think there's any chance of a wobble there, then I would steer clear of the structured product.
Very good advice indeed. And I think the lesson of this is make sure you understand exactly who's behind the product that you're buying. Thanks for that, Alice. And for more on these structured products, look out for Alice's article in FT Money with this weekend's FT, or go online to ft.com/money. Still to come on the show, what will financial advice and wealth management firms look like in the future? First, though, inflation, or rather the lack of it, or rather the threat of deflation. This week, the Office of National Statistics reported that inflation fell further in September to reach its lowest level in 5 years. Inflation, as measured by the Consumer Prices Index, dropped to an annual rate of just 1.1% last month, down from 1.6% in August. Economists had previously expected the CPI rate to fall to just 1.3%. And the longer-standing Retail Prices Index, which is used as the reference point for uprating benefits and tax thresholds, remained in negative territory at minus 1.4%. However, with billions of pounds being injected into the economy through the Bank of England's quantitative easing scheme, some fear that inflation will soon return with a vengeance. So if you're a saver or investor, should you be hedging your portfolio against inflation or deflation? Alice, it's difficult to know, isn't it?
It is difficult to know. This is actually one of the biggest questions, if not the biggest question, facing investors at the moment, because whether you're buying assets to protect against inflation or deflation makes quite a big difference. You're buying completely different things if you're worried about inflation and if you're worried about deflation. So you really need to take a view. Adrian, how do investors go about taking a view on inflation and deflation? What are the pressures either way?
It's very difficult for investors to take a view because experts have different views. The pressures are, I mean, one of the big pressures at the moment is oil. Oil prices have been very volatile over the last 2 years. And what we're seeing at the moment is a deflationary pressure from oil because the price is nearer $70 a barrel. A year ago, it was about $100 a barrel. That's about to change. If it stays at $70 a barrel by December, oil was closer to $35 a barrel then. So that will actually act as an inflationary pressure going forward. There's a couple of other factors that kick in around December, January time. The VAT cut that came into place in the middle of the crisis, that will expire in January, and that will add a big sort of spike to inflation. So our view is very much that we'll see an inflation spike coming forward as the price volatilities move, work out the system. But after that, I think inflation is probably going to remain on the weak side. So I don't think it'll be a big inflationary driver going forward. The economy is still weak, so you need consumer confidence to really be able to absorb rising prices, and they're just not there yet.
Okay, so we'll move on to deflation in a second, but if you believe in this weak inflation scenario, what should you buy?
If you've got a weak inflation scenario, I mean, it's actually not a bad situation. It's pretty good for a range of products. what would be good to buy is things with a decent yield, and I think it's all about the income yield. So commercial property funds, corporate bonds still look relatively attractive, although some of the capital benefits have been taken out of those. And equities will do reasonably well in a sort of benign inflationary environment.
Any old equity? Any particular types?
You get different types. I mean, cyclicals will do okay in that, and defences will actually do relatively well because of the yield as well. It's when you get the extremes that you want actually to then pick a certain area on equities. So if you're more concerned about high inflation, well, cyclicals will do okay in the short term, but then, you know, you've got to bring inflation under control in the longer term.
Okay. So let's look at deflation now. Now, it's interesting that you mentioned that defensive equities would do well in an inflationary environment, because I've also heard that they might be a good pick in deflation because of the yield that you can get on these stocks.
Defensives do sort of well in benign inflationary environments and sort of more deflationary environments because you're buying the yield. And if RPI is at -1.4 and your yield is 3%, the real return is nearer 4.4%. So you're buying that yield as a way to get a return. So also what you would look to buy is corporate bonds, defensive sovereign debt. And I think a lot of the sovereign debt fund managers, they believe in a more deflationary environment, and they would see money flowing into those funds if we continue along this track for a protracted period of time.
But we don't. You're not expecting us to. You think inflation will pick up again? What do people who disagree with you think? So, what would be the argument if you do think we're going to continue along the deflationary track?
The argument is that prices will fall and import prices will continue to fall. But the counter to that is that sterling is getting weaker, not stronger. So deflation could be driven by a rising pound. And other things is, if imports are falling, then it's sort of, you know, weaker prices from other countries trying to increase their exports into the UK. But we just don't see that position at the moment. We say the weak pound will actually drive inflation as opposed to a stronger pound driving deflation.
Okay, and just finally, if you find all this rather too confusing and you really can't make up your mind if there's going to be inflation or deflation, does it make sense to try and hedge your portfolio against both?
It does. There's an argument to always sort of have a balance of assets, because with an argument like this, there's a fine sort of tipping point, and the quantitative easing, if it goes on too long and isn't taken back at the right time, then inflation could become an issue in the longer term. That tipping point can change very quickly. Products like commercial property funds would actually help you benefit from both environments, because the yields are very attractive. So that's benefited in a deflationary environment, but in an inflation environment, yields are very attractive anyway. So a commercial property fund would be an all-weather area to look at, and that's starting to see that attraction at the moment in that area.
So it is possible to have a win-win situation on this.
It should be, yes.
Well, I'm glad you can cover yourself in either situation. So thanks for that, Adrian and Alice. And for a checklist of the assets to hold in either an inflationary or deflationary environment, look out for Alice's article in FT Money this weekend and online at ft.com/money. And finally today, the future of private banking, wealth management and financial advice generally. For the past 3 weeks, the FT has been pondering the future of investing. But what about the future of the investing experience? The financial crisis has exacerbated a lack of trust in institutions on the part of private investors, according to recent surveys. So will these institutions and these advisors have to change? Lucy, will wealth management companies and private banks look different in the future, do you think?
Well, they're certainly going to need to think about how to adapt to demands from clients. We've seen a couple of very major reports from PwC and Scorpio Partnership this year talking about an increased lack of trust between clients and managers. And there's been quite a few other things that they've been talking about: demand for transparency, a need to control costs, and a kind of lack of client relationship skills from some managers. So if they're actually listening to these reports, which they should be, then they must be sitting there thinking about how to change their business models at the moment.
And in terms of changing their business models, is this expected to result in changes to the fee structures that wealth managers and private banks impose? In other words, will financial advice, discretionary portfolio management get cheaper?
experts I've been speaking to this week have been saying that the fee structures definitely need to change. They need to be simplified and people need to be able to understand them and also compare them between different providers or different wealth managers. So some are suggesting that we could see an introduction of something like performance-related fees, where clients only pay a certain price if their funds actually go up in value by the amount that the manager has said they would do. Or there could be a flat fee introduced, but there certainly needs to be more transparency of fees, and that's what we're expecting to see, say, in the next kind of 5 years.
And this whole transparency issue seems to have come across incredibly strongly in these recent research reports. And I suppose it's not just fees, is it? It's transparency over what clients' money is actually being put into.
Yes, exactly. People now are calling for more kind of reporting structures. So people are actually saying that they want the manager to give them an update on how their money's doing kind of every 3 months or every 6 months. I think at the moment they only have to do it every year, and some managers only do it kind of once a year, although in the financial crisis, people have been taking much more of an interest on what's happening and been speaking to managers and private bankers about this.
And more transparency over investments, more transparency over fees will presumably promote greater independence on the part of the advisors and the way in which they give advice, which I suppose is something else which you take for granted but hasn't been the case.
Exactly. It's not actually the fees that's the problem. It's how they're sold and whether the managers are actually tied to the products they're selling. So if a wealth manager is actually selling in-house products, they need to make that very clear. People are saying that in the future we could see much more independent firms. So some wealth managers may just absolutely sell no in-house products at all.
And just finally, if I can bring in Adrian, if we can move from St James's Street to the High Street very briefly. You're an independent financial advisor. The FSA is banning commission for financial advisors at the end of 2012. How's that going to affect your business?
Fortunately, I mean, the way we operate is we work on the flat fee structure, so it's sort of a clear upfront fee negotiated and agreed ahead of any work is done. The commission, the problem with it is that it's not always clear to investors when they're being charged commission, where the commission is being in the product, who pays the commission to the advisor. So you end up with a situation of an advisor being tied to a particular product. And I think, I mean, the plan is to sort of ban commission at the moment, but it's still in the consultation phase. So things could change. It's not a done deal as yet. It will be interesting to see how it does sort of finalise and settle down.
But the future could be not so much bright, but transparent. So thank you for that, Adrian. And Lucy, if you'd like to read more about the advice services you can expect in the future, do look out for Lucy's article in the final part of our three-part series on the future of investing in this weekend's FT. And Alice will also be looking at the future of financial advice. But that's all for this week's FT Money Show. Remember that you can get your weekday news updates on our website, ft.com/money. And you can read and comment on our latest blog posts at ft.com/moneymatters, and you can even follow us on Twitter from that web page. We'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form, but until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Alice, Lucy, and Adrian Locock of Best in Best.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.